I'm Tom Rowe, your host of Free 103.9's Turn on the News, your high-octane look at radio art, radio news, media news, and more. Tonight, we will look at the FCC's $25,000 fine at Google. Facebook is defending its support of CISPA, the House cybersecurity bill. And wireless traffic has more than doubled. We'll follow all that up in just a second on Turn on the News. You can go to newsroom.free103.9.org or free103.9.org to learn more about transmission art and links to international sources of radio art, radio news, media news, and more. You're tuned to Turn on the News, Free 103.9's daily look at radio art, radio news, media news, and more. Go to newsroom.free103.9.org or free103.9.org for more information about radio art and more. Behind us tonight is Rasmussen. Several different tracks will follow. While we go over the radio headlines, the FCC has proposed fining Google $25,000 for impeding its investigation into Google's data collection from non-password-protected Wi-Fi networks related to its Street View mapping project, but did not take any action against it for that collection, John Egerton writes in Broadcasting and Cable magazine. Google has said it is disagreed with the commission's conclusion and would be filing a response. Google has claimed that data collection was a mistake, and the FCC concluded it had no precedent for finding Google had violated the commission's rules against unauthorized publication or use of communications. Other news from the Federal Communications Commission, the governing body for the spectrum in the United States. The commission, according to the public notice that the Benton Foundation reprints, has entered into a contract with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism to provide a literature review of research into the critical information needs of the American public and the barriers to participation in the communication industry that might limit the extent to which critical needs are met. You can go to the FCC website, fcc.gov, for more information about this report. The Benton Foundation also has a look at Maggie Fox's story in the National Journal about how U.S. wireless data traffic grew by 123% from 2010 to 2011, from 388 billion megabytes to 866.7 billion megabytes, according to the CTIA Wireless Association. 7% increase in wireless subscriber connections from 311 million in 2010 to 331.6 million last year. Number of active data-capable devices is 295 million, up from 270 million in 2010. Wireless-enabled tablets, which didn't exist before 2010. Laptops and modems, 20.2 million altogether, 49% increase from December 2010. Minutes of use, 2.296 trillion minutes of use in 2011, up just 2% from 2010. Average local monthly wireless bill, including voice and data service, is $47, which is virtually unchanged from 2010. You can find out more about all that at benton.org. And Benton.org has a link to another story from The Hill. Brandon Sasso reports about Facebook's response defending its support for the controversial cybersecurity bill CISPA, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. This is the latest bill that has some folks crying like SOPA before it. CISPA would tear down legal barriers that discourage companies from sharing information about cyber attacks, according to Sasso's report in The Hill. Folks, activists have argued that the broad language of the bill could lead companies to hand over information unrelated to cyber attacks, including users' names, addresses, and internet activity. They also are concerned that the bill would give military spy agencies such as the National Security Agency access to the information the companies share with the government. It's H.R. 3523, if you want to look it up, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. And you can go to Benton.org, too, for more information. We do want to mention that Ruben Marino Toulouse down in Argentina has an open call for radio art. It's from a show called Air Ear 2012 Radio and Nature. And it's going to run from June 23rd through July 21st in Santa Fe in Argentina, in San Justo. And the call for participation for radio art and sound art, Air Ear. Second collective installation of radio art and sound art will open in San Justo, Santa Fe, Argentina. Quote, radio signals are not, as commonly thought, a recent phenomenon. Nature has spoken through radio signals from the origins of the universe, unquote. In the age, quote, in the age of high technology, such as how long we live, we are surrounded by many electronic devices which manage the day-to-day, even more basic operations, whether it can be useless or useful. We are so accustomed to its presence, so I think part of the environment that we see every morning on waking, unquote. This is, I'm quoting the call for participation. Clearly, we are connected in real time. Everything that happens on our planet remains to be seen how much this can help improve our knowledge of himself. I'm guessing the translation is a little off, but that's kind of interesting. Quote, Nature gives us a powerful device, the radio signal, to observe what is around us. We must be careful not to forget that the most of the advanced knowledge we have today about the universe comes from observations with radio telescopes and not with the observations in an optical field. Even our planet is a radio signal source, especially at low frequencies. Each of us has, at the same time, listening to a radio crackling noises, medium wave during a storm. Different natural phenomena such as auroras, earthquakes, and storms create radio signals, and these signals can be studied with a very simple and inexpensive device. We have lost the direct physical contact with our surroundings. We just have to think about the objects that meant the technology to our grandparents. Renato Romero, that's a quote, I guess, from him. Each form of address to the radio from the nature mean a knowledge of ourselves and our relationship with this device has up to 90 years of age. The radio sound is our grandmother. So that's the call from Argentina. They're looking for sound files, MP3 wave, cassette, and PDFs and papers, documents, too. Sounds and thoughts. And you need to send them to rmtolosa@gmail.com. That's Ruben Marino Toulouse in San Justo, Santa Fe, Argentina. And I'll give that email address one more time, rmtolosa@gmail.com. And we've just been hearing recently Muslim Gods behind. Behind us tonight is The River from William Baczynski, and he's one of the radio artists we'll look at tonight who use shortwave sounds in their work. And today is World Amateur Radio Day. That's why we're tuning into shortwave today. And we'll have more from the National Amateur Radio Association in a few minutes about that. First, the headlines. Brendan Sasso at The Hill reports that the headline is, the administration pushes against House cybersecurity bill. And the White House issued a statement on late Tuesday, April 17th, criticizing a U.S. House of Representatives cybersecurity bill. National Security Council spokeswoman Caitlin Hayden said any cybersecurity legislation should include strong privacy protections and should set mandatory security standards for critical infrastructure systems such as electrical grids and water supplies. The House is set to vote on the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, CISPA, next week. And the American Civil Liberties Union, the Center for Democracy and Technology, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and other groups are leading a week of protests against CISPA, which they warn could lead companies to hand over private user information to spy agencies. You can read more about that at thehill.com. In the United States this week, the National Association of Broadcasters has been holding their annual convention in Las Vegas. It's an annual tradition. It used to be pirate broadcasters would sneak in to record the workshops they had on fighting pirate radio and pass those recordings on cassette tapes in the U.S. Postal Service. Those were the days. Anyway, now the Federal Communications Chairman Julius Genachowski gave the keynote speech Monday, April 16th at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention. And the headline at ProPublica is, "Broadcasters are, quote, against transparency," unquote, says FCC chairman. ProPublica reports, let's see, that Genachowski said, "Some in the broadcast industry have elected to position themselves against technology, against transparency, and against journalism," unquote, said Genachowski, who favors a proposed rule to make political ad data more accessible. And exactly who's paying for the political ads that the television stations are airing, and every 4 years making a great deal of money. If you can see how much the Obama and the Romney campaigns are raising, and what percentage goes to the broadcast industry in the form of advertisements. And you include the super PAC money this time. And you understand why the broadcast industry doesn't want to let you know who's paying for those ads. All right, we're going to talk about Mike Dodge Weisskopf a little later. And one of the things he's doing is May 19th and 20th, he's doing a marathon broadcast of shortwave recordings from Mali on WHRB 95.3 FM in Cambridge, Massachusetts, part of their biannual WHRB orgy tradition where they play 22-hour-long broadcasts. This one will feature rare live recordings from more than a dozen of Mali's finest homegrown musicians, as well as extensive folkloric and regional music from the libraries of Malaysian state and community FM broadcasters. That is May 19th and 20th on WHRB near Boston in the United States. The ITU Telecom World 2012 conference in Dubai, October 14th through 18th, has a young innovators program looking for youth innovation for development. It's a chance for young visionaries to demonstrate their ideas on innovations on a global stage. At the ITU Telecom World Conference in Dubai, if you go to ARRL.org, the National Amateur Radio Association website, they have a link to the program that could send you to the United Arab Emirates. All right, like we've been telling you, today is World Amateur Radio Day, April 18th. This week is World Amateur Radio Day, the 87th anniversary of the founding of the International Amateur Radio Union. And we'll let the National Association for Amateur Radio tell the story with their weekly podcast all about World Amateur Radio Day, April 18th.
2012 marks the 87th anniversary of the founding of the International Amateur Radio Union. To mark this occasion, the IARU and its more than 160 member societies will celebrate World Amateur Radio Day on Wednesday, April 18th. For many years, the IARU has declared a theme for each World Amateur Radio Day. The theme for 2012 is Amateur Radio Satellites, Celebrating 50 Years in Space, in remembrance of the launch of Oscar 1 on December 12, 1961, and the launch of Oscar 2 on June 2, 1962. In 1924, then ARRL President Hiram Percy Maxim, W1AW, had scheduled a business trip to Europe. While in Europe, Maxim was asked by the ARRL Board of Directors to represent the League in fostering international relations between amateurs. This, of course, he was delighted to do. Following the informal meeting in 1924, representatives from France, Great Britain, Belgium, Switzerland, Italy, Spain, Luxembourg, Canada, and the United States formulated a plan to hold an International Amateur Congress in Paris, France, in April 1925 for the purpose of founding the IARU. Representatives from Europe, North America, South America, and Asia attended the Congress, adopting a constitution for the IARU on April 17th. At a closing assembly on the following day, officers were elected and the actions of the Congress ratified by representatives from 25 countries. Thus, April 18th became the official birthday of the IARU and is now designated World Amateur Radio Day. Today, just as Maxim and his counterparts envisioned, the IARU is an international confederation of national amateur radio organizations that allows a forum for common matters of concern and collectively represent matters to the International Telecommunication Union. To celebrate World Amateur Radio Day, many stations around the globe will be on the air. For a list of these stations that plan to be on the air, please see the April 12th edition of the ARRL letter.
We'll quote the article from the Washington Post. The sale is meant to appease regulators who are reviewing whether Verizon will have too much dominance in the wireless industry if we're also to buy AWS Airways from Spectrum Co., a consortium of cable giants including Comcast and Time Warner Cable. The airways Verizon said it would sell in the A and B portion of the 700 megahertz band are not being used for its deployment of LTE 4G services. The A and B block licenses cover dozens of major cities and, quote, a number of smaller and rural markets, unquote. You can see that full story at Benton Foundation. Benton.org, actually, is the website. ProPublica.org, another website that tracks all kinds of information, reports that the Federal Communication Commission gave Google a $25,000 fine as part of its investigation into the collection of sensitive wireless network data as part of the Google's Street View mapping project. ProPublica breaks it down. Google made $2.89 billion last quarter, or $25,000 in profits every 68 seconds. So the FCC fined them 68 seconds worth of profits. John Egerton at Broadcasting and Cable reports that the FCC wireless spectrum notice of public comment is up for comment. Notice of public recommendation is up for comment. Let's see. The FCC declined to grant the Dish Network a waiver similar to the LightSquared waiver it granted before it rescinded it to use MSS spectrum for a terrestrial wireless broadband service. The FCC did approve Dish Network's $3 billion purchase of about 40 megahertz of MSS spectrum from two bankrupt entities, DBSD North America and TerraStar. The satellite giant has said it plans to build its own wireless network with licenses. And you can read that full story at Broadcasting and Cable. I'm Tom Rowe. You're tuned in to Turn on the News, Free 103.9's Daily Look-In. Radio art, radio news, media news, and more. Today we're going to tune into Free Press's Media Minutes in just a few minutes, and we also have headlines from around the world of radio. First in the United States. Well, not in the United States. We'll first start around the world, and we'll go to the Slovak Republic, the country with the fastest internet on the planet, according to Google. It average page loads of 3.3 seconds. South Korea is the fastest on mobile phones at 4.8 seconds. The slowest, according to Google, is Indonesia with an average web page loading speed of 20.3 seconds. In mobile, the United Arab Emirates was 26.7 seconds, the slowest. And the U.S., meanwhile, was somewhere in the middle. On the desktop, it took an average of 5.7 seconds to load a page, and a mobile device, 9.2 seconds. You can go to Benton.org for more information, the Benton Foundation reporting this through Google News. Behind us now is Melissa Dubin and music from the first karate lesson from Dado Blade, Free 103.9 release. JimRomanesco.com is reporting about Howard Stern losing his, or getting, actually, a judge dismissing his lawsuit against Sirius Satellite Radio. And Howard Stern, the radio host in the United States, shock jock is one word used for folks like that. Let's just read his quotes because they're always so much fun to hear straight from Howard Stern. I was so aggravated with the lawsuit news. I'm reading the newspaper articles. I'm arguing with the newspaper articles. I saw so many newscasters reporting this thing, so excited that I lost my lawsuit because they're all jealous. They don't like that I make a lot of money. They're so stupid because they don't understand if they ever get into business where they're in a contract, I'd be the first one to stand up for them because talent always gets screwed over. I have my contracts throughout my career with various broadcast companies. All of them screwed me out of the contract. Some of them I sue and some of them I don't because it's so expensive and it always ends up going against talent. It's the same thing I see where people sit in the stands at football games and go, that guy makes too much in money. I go, no, he doesn't. That money, the owners are making too much in money. They're not risking their neck. They're not going to be dead at 52. And a second quote about New York Daily News is David Hinckley, who has a regular radio column, one of the few left in the country in daily newspapers, and a good one. You know, I'm going to compliment David Hinckley. I used to give him a hard time, but he's the only guy who even writes about radio anymore. I was reading the ratings yesterday for radio. No one writes about radio anymore. But if he didn't write about it, who would have known that WLIT, Light Radio, now is the number one radio station? And that's what got me thinking. I should go back to terrestrial radio. I think in a week I could have the number one radio show again. I don't see anyone out there that can compete with me. I don't. I'm here 6 years and nothing's changed. Radio is still and sucks. No innovators, nothing going on. Go to JimRomanescu.com for more on that. Meanwhile, the Benton organization, Benton Foundation, is reporting all kinds of other radio news. U.S. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat from Virginia, is calling for a spectrum inventory in the United States. He thinks there are pockets of semi-fallow use. That's the term he uses. Verizon's chief financial officer denies wireless carrier has hoarded spectrum. That's a headline at the Benton Foundation also. And there's much talk, too, about Verizon trading some of the spectrum it's not hoarding for other spectrum it would rather hoard. Benton Foundation is also reporting that FCC is going to allow text-to-speech emergency alerts. It's part of the emergency alert system.
Welcome to Media Minutes. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Megan Tatey. Public media like NPR and PBS are designed to be ad-free, but soon the non-commercial broadcast stations may be airing political ads. Last week, a U.S. appeals court struck down a ban on political advertising on public TV and radio stations. In a 2-1 decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the judges ruled that the ban on political advertising violated the First Amendment. The judges said that permitting these sorts of ads would not threaten or undermine the educational nature of public broadcasting. But media watchdog groups like Free Press say the move deviates from the original vision of non-commercial programming. Political attack ads are on the rise, with commercial broadcasters raking in billions this year alone. Tim Carr, Free Press Senior Director of Strategy, said the public could now be inundated with these ads on the non-commercial stations they trust to deliver ad-free programming.
A lot of viewers out there are so sick of seeing these ads that they have chosen non-commercial media to escape from this inundation, this flood of political ads. Now, with this ruling, it means that is no longer a safe haven for them, that they potentially can turn on their favorite show on PBS, whether it's Sesame Street or Downton Abbey or The NewsHour, and see the same types of ads that they're experiencing in excess on commercial stations.
In poll after poll, Americans overwhelmingly say that public broadcasting should be supported with public funds. Carr said NPR and PBS shouldn't be turning to political ads as part of their funding stream.
The idea that public media, that PBS and NPR need to seek other sources of income in order to survive, isn't supported by public opinion. So I think it's really incumbent on people in Congress to see that sort of funding goes through rather than urging stations to resort to these alternatives, which really undermines the vision of public media.
Free Press is urging public media stations to reject these political ads through an online petition. Already, one PBS affiliate, KPBS in San Diego, and one local radio station, KSFR in Santa Fe, have committed to reject them. But there are 350 public television stations and 900 public radio outlets nationwide.
So we do still have a long way to go to get all of these stations to pledge not to accept these dirty attack ads.
To find out more, visit freepress.net.
Once being called the largest fiber optic network in North America was unveiled last week in South Central North Dakota. The 90 million, 10,000 square mile project combines two telecommunication cooperatives, Dakota Central Communications and Dickey Rural Networks, to bring high-speed fiber optic broadband service to 18,000 homes and businesses.
What's great about fiber to the home is it's really the purest and fastest form of an internet connection you can have. And in a place like North Dakota, that's historically always had a digital divide, has been not as economically competitive because of that, it really tears down a lot of those barriers and creates a wonderful opportunity for that region to do some really cool things.
That's Jasper Schneider, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development State Director. He says having access to a truly high-speed internet connection creates opportunities for telemedicine, distance learning, business telecommuting, starting new businesses, or expanding existing ones. Agriculture has become a high-tech business, Schneider says. For instance, high-speed connections help dairy farmers check on their cows.
Sitting at home or being on the road or in a tractor or wherever you may be with your iPad, you can have simultaneously all your cameras on the screen at once, and you can get, you know, a real-time snapshot of your production.
There are dairy operations that have surveillance cameras throughout their barns, fields, and pastures.
This isn't your grandfather's farm anymore. These farms and ranches, with GPS technology, with high-speed internet connection, with just all sorts of technology, they've become very sophisticated operations.
The network was financed largely through the USDA Rural Development Office in the form of loans. And grants from the Broadband Stimulus and the Recovery Act help bring connections to those areas lacking broadband service.
Rural broadband is 21st century infrastructure, and I think it's probably the single biggest thing that can be a game changer for rural America. You look at the economic recovery that we're going through right now, you know, one of the few bright spots actually has been agriculture and domestic energy production. And both of those generally are very much rural industries. And so I think that's kind of important to remember in the larger context of what we're doing as a country. Where access to a high-speed internet connection isn't just a luxury. It's becoming a necessity and almost a backbone for almost everything we do.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
I'm Tom Murray. You're listening to Turn on the News. And now, after we just heard the evils of advertisements on public radio stations, let's hear an ad for the band's album Stage Fright, in honor of Levon Helm, who died this week.
See the man with the stage fright, just standing up there to give it all his might.
The album is called Stage Fright.
And he got caught in the spotlight. When we get to the end, you want to start all over again.
The group is called The Band. Stage Fright, the third album by The Band. Stage Fright, The Band, on Capitol.
Save your net, or save your brother. Looks like it.
And the band plays on.
Oh, you don't know the shape I'm in. Oh!
party, dancing to the music played by the DJ on the radio. The cokes are in the icebox, popcorn's on the table. Me and my baby, we're out here on the floor. So Mr. DJ, keep those records playing, 'cause I'm having such a good time dancing with my baby. Everybody's swinging, Sally's doing that twist now. If you take requests, I got a few for you. Play that song called Soul Twist. Play that one called I Know. Don't forget them mashed potatoes. No other songs will do. Let me tell you, Mr. DJ, keep those records playing, 'cause I'm having such a good time dancing with my baby. Having a party, yeah. Everybody's swinging. Oh, we're dancing to the music, yeah. On the radio. Oh, we're having a party, man. Everybody's swinging. We're dancing to the music, yeah. On the radio. One more time, we are having a party. Yeah, and everybody's swinging. Oh, we are dancing to the music. Yeah.
Я живая. Я не рассказываю о предчувствии смерти. Во мне бушевали страсти, и все, в чем я нуждалась, было дано мне. Я заблудилась. Я переходила с места на место. Я живу только сегодняшним днем. Я была мешком с водой. Я была неподвижной пучиной. Я размазала свою кровь. Я стала каплей воды, баночкой с чернилами. Я любила людей. Я потеряла их. Кем я была раньше? Я была сумкой с водой, безжизненной субстанцией, неподвижной пучиной. Я прочитала много книг. Я сожалею. Я оказалась за пределами города. Я сказала себе: конец близок. Я подошла к дому, но не вошла в него. Я действительно очень замерзла. У меня не было врагов. Я потеряла свое зрение, стала близорукой. Я не могла посмотреть. Я спала. Я лежала, умирая, не говоря ничего. Я ничего не могла чувствовать.
Satellite crushing the last light American eyes.
That was 1 hour of breathing from National Public Radio in 17 seconds. For that, Bruce Springsteen with Radio Nowhere. For that, Paolo Raposa with Verbatim from Essays on Radio. Can I have 2 minutes of your time? CD full of two-minute tracks. Radio. And before that, Sam Cooke with Having a Party started things off there. Behind us is Dueling Transmitters' Cuambriant from shortwavemusic.blogspot.com. It's Mike David Weisskopf. Next up, we're going to go back to the Bronze Age of radio and hear Fibber McGee and Molly, a radio theater production from the 1940s, on Turn on the News from Free 103.9.
I guess we all used Molly's famous, "'Tain't funny, McGee."
What are you reading, dearie?
Wimple's bird book. He left it here last night. And you never read such a miss of mass information in your life. It's awful.
Well, if it's that bad, why do you read it?
It's so garbled, it fascinates me. This book has got more wrong answers than a nervous housewife on Take It or Leave It. Look at the title, even. American Birds and Their Habits. They can't even spell habits, you see?
Where?
There.
Oh, that word isn't habits, dearie. It's habitats.
Oh. Well, what I want to know is what their habits are. Who cares where they have their habits at? Any bird lover who reads this would throw eggs at the publisher.
Say, when did you become such a bird lover, lover?
Ever since the first time I had quail with wild rice.
What particular statement in that book are you quarreling with?
Well, listen to what it says about the feeding habitats of the pelican.
All right.
It says the pelican feeds occasionally on other things besides fish, but it definitely prefers marine life. Now, that is ridiculous.
Why is it?
There ain't a pelican living that could get in the marines. They even turned me down twice.
Dearie, that isn't what that means.
Huh?
Besides, I think you're being too critical. After all, you're not much of an expert on bird life.
Who ain't?
You ain't.
Huh?
I mean, you aren't.
Oh, the heck I aren't. Who was it worked his way through high school raising baby chicks and even invented a slot machine that would dispense them 2 for a quarter? And who was it that a chewing gum took his idea and beat him to the patent office?
What chewing gum?
Chiclets. That's why I say these people are like these...
Come in.
Oh, it's Wallace Wimple. Hi, Wimp.
Hello, Mr. Wimple.
Hello, folks.
We were just reading your bird book, Mr. Wimple. Hope you don't mind.
Oh, not at all, Mrs. McGee. I'm glad to know where I left it. I'm afraid I was rather upset when I left here last night.
Yeah, we noticed that, Wimp. Yeah.
Why? Did I do something?
Well, we had the radio turned on to a political rabble.
Oh, I remember now. A deep voice snarled, "Wallace is going to get the beating of his life." And I went right out the window.
Yeah.
silly me.
Hey, how are you getting along these days with her, Wimp?
You mean Sweetie Face? My big old wife?
Yes.
About as usual. We had a little tiff yesterday, and believe me, Sweetie Face puts up a tough tiff.
What was it about, Wimp?
Oh, it was nothing, really.
No?
She came back from downtown with a new hairdo and asked me how I liked it.
Ben?
And I told her. Frankly, Sweetie Face, I said, it looks like an explosion in an Excelsior factory.
Oh.
I said, or a crew haircut with mutiny on the poop deck. I don't blame them for dyeing your hair, I said, but they waited too long to embalm it.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. And then out loud, I said, it looks simply beautiful, dear.
My gosh, how could she object to that?
She knows me so well. She ignored the compliments on my lips and tried to slap the expression off my face. When I ducked, she... Oh, speaking of ducks, did you enjoy reading my bird book?
Yeah.
No.
What?
Confidentially, Wimp, this book is fuller of tripe than the inside of a cow.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Mr. McGee. This is the finest bird book there is. This is the authority on birds. It tells about the dodo bird disappearing, the migratory habits of the snow goose,
how
the passenger pigeon became extinct.
Wait a minute. What was that again?
You mean about the passenger pigeon?
Yeah, that.
Well, it says on page 49, and I quote, "The passenger pigeon, which once swarmed over the North American continent by the millions, has become completely extinct. The last known passenger pigeon died in the Cincinnati Zoo in 1914.
Exactly. That's just what I mean. That is a falsehood.
What do you mean, McGee?
I mean I saw a passenger pigeon today. I've seen one every day for weeks.
Oh, my goodness, Mr. McGee, if what you say is true...
And it is.
If you actually saw a real-life passenger pigeon, why any zoo in the country would pay thousands for one.
You mean thousands of money?
Thousands of dollars for one pigeon, Mr. Wimple? Are you sure it was a passenger pigeon, McGee?
Why, sure I'm sure it was a passenger pigeon. Hey, if they're worth that kind of dough, I could trap that thing and sell it for... Oh, my gosh, where's my hammer? Where's my tools? I gotta make a trap. Where's my screwdriver?
I don't know, Mr. McGee. I'm just a guest here.
Oh, I know. I left it right here in the hall closet.
Now, don't open that door, McGee.
Thank you.
Where you're listening to Turn on the News, and before that was AGF with Radio War Post-China Industrial Mix. And Derek Pyote got things started with Glass Broadcast from his brand new airing CD that is pre-released April 16th on the BitSquare label.